Today at 5 is the deadline for candidates to file nomination papers to get on the ballot for the state's August 14th partisan primary and the November 6th general election. And the Elections Commission will be open later hours tonight. They'll be open Saturday to provide copies of documents that are needed to file challenges to candidates' nomination papers. We're talking women in politics here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A record number of female candidates are running for Congress or governor this year, and they're rewriting the playbook on how campaigns operate. We're going to be hearing a sampling of campaign ads along the way. Here's Lindsey Brown, who's running as a progressive Republican in a U.S. House race in New Jersey.
I figure if working moms can work full time and have kids, then my campaign will be my kid and I'll work full time and the campaign will be at daycare from 9 to 5.
I would like to bring a young millennial woman voice to the Republican Party and to truly represent the voters who have been left behind by today's Republican establishment.
Let's bring in Amanda Hunter for analysis. She's communications director for the Barbara Lee Family Foundation, which aims to advance women's equality and representation in American politics and the field of contemporary art. Amanda, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, let's first start with trends that you are seeing. What struck you this year about the women who are running for office?
Oh, gosh, so much. What we're seeing this year is women stepping up to run with a sense of urgency that we previously haven't seen before. Women are challenging incumbents and also running for higher office than the typical path previously women might take of starting with the school board or something a little bit more local. And they're also really being 360-degree candidates, using the whole of their life experience and kind of shining a light on different aspects of their personality and their life.
We're seeing a lot of personality come out through these campaigns, and just really interesting how the women are being very transparent about who they are. We're seeing more emotion on the campaign trail, and we're having playing some of the candidate videos along the way. And there was one that we were just in awe of yesterday as we were looking at Heidi Heitkamp, who is running as a Democrat in North Dakota. Let's take a listen to hers.
She led the fight to open up markets for North Dakota oil. Republicans say she's stronger than battery acid and interested in getting things done. And newspapers, a rare senator who often votes against party. Her independent streak, a point of pride. The most conservative Democrat in Washington.
I'm Heidi Heitkamp, and I approve this message because when it comes to fighting for North Dakota, I take battery acid as a compliment.
What do you make of that, the whole battery acid analogy?
You know, when we saw that ad, we were all smiling, and I think it's the first time that we can recall seeing a candidate fix a truck in an ad. So again, it's kind of showing a different side of her, certainly a little bit playful and tongue-in-cheek, but it's showing a different side of her rather than the standard woman in a suit at a podium kind of image.
And there have been, though, a number of images of her sitting shoulder to shoulder with President Trump. What is the perception there?
I'm not sure. I would be curious to see what the perception is in North Dakota. Mm. I think we tend to look, we certainly pay attention to all the ads and stay up on them, but we really look kind of more generally at overall trends that we're seeing. So I'm curious to see kind of what people think, and I'd love to hear that.
Do we have any sense of how many women are running for office?
Yes. So we have more women are running for governor this year than ever before. We have 63, and these numbers come from our friends at COP. We have 63 women still in the running for governor. The most women that have run previously was in 1994. It was 34 women. So that's a big jump. For Senate, there are 46 women nationwide still in the running. And for the U.S. House, there are 388 women. And in Congress right now, there are 468 seats up this cycle, 36 governorships.
Let's look at the barriers that women face when they run for office. What are the challenges you're seeing?
That's such a great question. So it's kind of twofold. We did some research late last year and found that actually now is a really excellent time for women running for office. Voters are fed up with the status quo and see a vote for a woman as a vote for change. So that's very positive. On the flip side, women have to work twice as hard to prove their accomplishments. So men can simply list points on a resume or jobs that they've held, but women have to go the extra step and prove results that they've gotten. Have you created jobs? Did you balance the budget? And so we recommend that candidates use action-oriented language to really illustrate their accomplishments.
And what are the, so as you say, you know, the men can list them on a resume, but are women, even in their advertising, having to show these, demonstrate these in their campaign ads?
Exactly. So we also found in our research recently that voters are open to voting for women who have never held office before, and we're certainly seeing a lot of first-time women candidates running, but they want to see what the women have done in their community previously. So some women have been education organizers or maybe, you know, worked on town committees and things. So really working to prove those qualifications. And then certainly we see them using the whole of their experience, whether it's family or talking about, you know, family struggles with addiction and other serious issues and kind of shedding a light on them as a whole person.
What do we know about how voters feel about female candidates?
So we found that voters are very open to female candidates, and women on both sides of the aisle currently have advantages with voters because voters see women as different. Both Democrats and Republican women kind of amplify advantages that Democrat and Republican candidates have. And Republican women candidates, we found, are able to overcome some issues that women are typically weak on, like the economy. So it was very encouraging research.
Do women candidates have to achieve different standards in the eyes of women voters?
Well, yes, but also in male voters, too. One of the things that we say all the time that we found is that voters will support a man that they do not like, but they believe is qualified, but they will not vote for a woman if they do not like her. And they have women have a very short window of time to win voters over and prove that they are likable. So they're really walking a tightrope.
How do you prove that you're likable? What does that look like?
It's such a great question. So we did a whole study, and it's walking a tightrope because it's sharing credit with your team, but also making sure that you're taking credit to prove that you're qualified. Proving that you're qualified actually makes people like you. And authenticity and confidence are so important. Voters can always sense that. So what we're seeing right now is a lot of women candidates being authentic, and that's kind of, I think, what you're talking about in some of those ads.
Amanda Hunter is our guide. She is communications director for the Barbara Lee Family Foundation, which is tracking these trend lines in female candidates running for office, gathering your insights, your questions, 800-642-1234. Women, are you running for office? Tell us about your experience on the campaign trail so far. What's inspired you to run? Join in, 800-642-1234. Amanda, as you take a look at the election season that we're in, as we approach the midterms, have the campaigns you've seen among women, have they been predictable, or have there been some surprises to you?
I think there's been, it's been sort of both. I think that women are taking some unconventional strategies, and those seem to be paying off in a lot of ways. And when we looked at the municipals, even last fall on the local level, there were a lot of women first-time candidates that were successful that folks didn't think had a chance. So it seems like in some cases all bets are off And we're watching very closely to see how voters respond.
For a variety of reasons, women are running for office in record numbers. The latest count this week by the Associated Press, 41 women have qualified to run for the Senate in the November election, beating the previous all-time high of 40 female candidates that ran in 2016. The 2018 roster of candidates officially broke the record on Wednesday thanks to Wisconsin. Republican State Senator Leah Vukmir filed paperwork to run against incumbent Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin. We're looking at the challenges, the opportunities of women candidates running for office here on The Morning Show. Amanda Hunter stays with us. She's with the Barbara Lee Family Foundation, which is tracking these trend lines. Your insights, your questions, 800-642-1234. Why do you want to be an elected official if you're a woman running for office? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to the conversation after this news update. A new study from the Barbara Lee Family Foundation says that the Me Too movement's focus on sexual harassment has not just shifted the cultural dialogue in our country, but it could actually reshape how candidates campaign in the midterms. The national poll found voters respond positively to both male and female candidates who include proactive language about fighting sexual harassment in their introductory materials and campaign statements. We're talking about the study, the influx of women running for office. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Here's another campaign ad. This is Krish Omara Vignaraja, a candidate in the Democratic gubernatorial primary in Maryland.
There are no women in statewide or federal office in Maryland. None. This isn't just about representation. It's about policy. States with women in government have better schools, better health care, lower incarceration rates. I want all of that for Maryland. My parents came to this country with $200, and I grew up to be policy director for Michelle Obama. Some say no man can beat Larry Hogan. Well, I'm no man. I'm a mom, I'm a woman, and I want to be your next governor.
Another campaign ad there. Amanda Hunter is our guide this hour. She's communications director for the Barbara Lee Family Foundation. You can join in, 800-642-1234. What barriers do you think there are for women running for office today? And on the other hand, what opportunities are there for women candidates right now? What do you think voters are looking for this election season? And does gender in politics make a difference to you? Call in. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Mark, who is joining us from Chippewa Falls. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So in response to what I noticed earlier, you all speaking about a lot of national-level positions, governorships or senators, U.S. Congress positions that were all being sought by women, but it's also happening in a very real way in western Wisconsin on the local level, where after a community meeting at our library about a month ago, there was an information meeting about the Foxconn plant that's going up in southeastern Wisconsin. I found myself in a conversation with five or six other people. All of them were running for office. I was the only one who was just a regular citizen. And I was also the only male in the group. Every one of them was a woman. And it was county level. It was the 69th. It was our Senate district. Ren Katuri had just announced she's running for representative of our district in Chippewa Falls and Bloomer. And it was just very refreshing to be in a group of women all talking about the future of our state in a way that I don't think I've ever experienced before. It was exciting. And that's all. I'll let you all back to it. Thanks for taking my call.
Mark, thank you so much for bringing that perspective from where you are in western Wisconsin. Amanda, your thoughts there on this local uprising?
Yeah, absolutely. That's so great. What we see is that a lot of women run for office because they connect to the impact of an issue. So something has affected either them or their family or their community, and they get involved to solve a problem. So it makes sense that Mark would be at a community meeting and run into these women who are getting involved and running. We find that women, maybe start by attending meetings passively or marching, protesting, organizing, contacting their elected officials, and then all of a sudden are running themselves. It's really exciting.
How has the Me Too movement played a role in women running for office?
So we took a look at this because it's really only been 7 months, unbelievably, since Me Too really exploded on social media. And our research shows that voters feel very strongly. 81% of voters see sexual harassment in the workplace as a serious problem. And 79% of men say that sexual harassment in the workplace is a serious problem. A majority of voters will not support a candidate who's been accused of sexual harassment, but furthermore, won't support a candidate who won't make fighting sexual harassment a priority. And we looked at messages because everyone is saying that there could be a backlash. So we tested messages questioning or belittling the Me Too movement and found that voters responded very negatively and doubted candidates who made those statements against the Me Too movement.
Do we know which voters are most likely to connect sexual harassment to voting decisions?
Yes, millennial women overwhelmingly feel very strong. Their numbers are even higher. 86% of millennial women see sexual harassment in the workplace as a problem, and 73% of millennial women would never vote for a person accused of sexual harassment. And millennial women tend to be drop-off voters who may not always vote in the midterm. So our pollster said this really has the potential to energize these drop-off voters in the midterm.
Let's go to Steve joining us from Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve. Good morning.
Morning. Thank you for taking my call. You know, as a father of two daughters, I think it's fantastic that women are entering the political fray. But, you know, what turns me off is when women are running as women candidates. Run as a candidate, not as a woman candidate. I don't want my daughters growing up in an environment where they're viewed as victims and that they can't be treated equally. So comments like, I believe it was Madeleine Albright that said, there's a special place in hell for women who don't support other women. That turns me off. Just run as a candidate. Don't run as a victim.
Steve, thank you. Amanda, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, thank you for that. I think that unfortunately women, I don't think any of these women are victims that are running. I think that unfortunately there are very real barriers that women face when running for office. There are structural barriers, like more difficulty when it comes to things like fundraising. And then there is the fact that gender is important. And some voters, you know, they look at women with a lot more scrutiny than they do men. And so we want women to be empowered to understand these obstacles and to be able to overcome them.
So when women candidates or male candidates advocate for change when it comes to sexual harassment, or they take a hardline stance, or they're vocal about it, how have voters reacted to that? And do we know anything that is concrete at the ballot box?
Right. So we found in our research that including a phrase about fighting sexual harassment in a candidate's profile, which is the statement that kind of introduces them to voters, had really positive reactions for both Democratic and Republican women candidates. And it also really increases support from their base, so folks who were already supporting them. So based on what we saw in our research from how voters felt, this will likely have an impact at the ballot box, but it seems too early to tell any sort of concrete examples at this point.
Matt from Wausau emailed and said, I'm all for women taking a stronger role. Last election cycle, Matt says, I didn't vote for a single man up and down the ballot the first time that was even possible. It's a step in the right direction. Dave emails and says, as long as women are running within the corrupt pay-to-play system where special interest campaign cash dictates your policies, it makes no difference which gender holds office. So Dave sees a much more jaded view there than Matt. So what about the system, Amanda? Are women going about fundraising differently?
Well, I mean, we found that it's, you know, anecdotally, women don't have access to the old boys club, which tends to be a lot easier for the sort of ingrained male politicians. And what we're seeing right now with women challenging incumbents, I think that they're feeling like they're sick of being told to wait their turn, because I think they've figured out that it's never going to be their turn. And women are, you know, getting at the grassroots and having to be more creative when it comes to overcoming some of those barriers like fundraising.
Talking with Amanda Hunter, she's communications director for the Barbara Lee Family Foundation, which works to advance women's equality and representation in American politics. Your insights on women you see who are running for office, 800-642-1234. What barriers do you think there are for women running today? And on the other hand, what opportunities are there? Is this the right time? What do you think voters are looking for this election season? And with the Me Too movement continuing to make waves, does sexual harassment and a candidate's stance on it make a difference to you? Are you more likely to vote for a candidate who takes a hard line against sexual harassment? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@WPR.org. Amanda, let's take a look at motherhood on the campaign trail, specifically starting with the appearance of breastfeeding in some campaign videos so far this season. One of those came from Wisconsin, and we're going to hear a clip here from the video of Democratic gubernatorial candidate Kelda Royce, who is talking about BPA, that chemical found in plastics that some scientists have suggested is linked to health problems.
Government should be about helping every person achieve his or her potential. And Wisconsin used to do it so well. Democracy only works when we all get involved.
So in that video, she is breastfeeding her infant daughter. What does use of this action show us?
Yeah, this is so fascinating. And also, Krish from Maryland, who we heard from earlier, has a similar video where she's breastfeeding as well. So motherhood has been very front and center on the campaign trail. We did research on voters and responding to a woman's family situation. And voter expectations of women haven't really kept up with how families have evolved since the 1960s. Our research shows that traditionally voters worry about the effect of a campaign on a woman candidate's children, especially if they're young. And they're worried about whether a candidate will be able to serve her constituents and care for her family. They acknowledge and at times question the double standard that mothers face on the campaign trail, but they still actively participate in it. What Ms. Royce did is in line with the advice that we have in that study called Modern Family, that it's effective for women to respond to critiques by being sort of matter-of-fact, talking about their personal life, and then pivoting to their positions on policy issues, which she does very seamlessly in that ad.
There's been also some this news coverage of some cases in which campaign funds can be used for child care. What does that mean for women running for office?
Yeah, it's such a great question. So when we see there are more women running than ever and younger women, and so, of course, a lot of those women have younger children, this rule really removes a barrier for women and men who may be considering a run for office but are concerned about how they're going to manage paying for child care. Because the reality is a lot of people have to step down from their job if they're going to be campaigning full time, or if they're, you know, at home taking care of their children, they're going to have to figure out arrangements to be out in the field campaigning.
Let's bring in Mac joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, Mac.
Hi, I just wanted to comment. I've been active in politics a little bit here in Eau Claire County, and the party, the Democratic Party, is, I think, mainly made up of women, and the more active members of the county party are women, and I'm just glad that they're going from being workers on campaigns and being the soul of the politics, now they're finally being the face of politics, so I'm just glad to see that transition.
Mac, would you consider voting for a female candidate, or is it all in the merit of the candidate itself?
Well, yeah, it's about the merit, but all things being equal, I would definitely go for the women first, because they have a different perspective, and they're 50% of the population, yet they're still not 50% of the government.
Do you think policy-wise, policy changes might look different if women would be in office?
Definitely. We don't have paid family leave, and we're one of the only countries in the world that doesn't. And I think that's because women aren't at the table when we make those policies.
Well, Mac, thank you so much for calling in. Amanda, what is the breakdown, if you know, of women in Democratic women and Republican women? Do we see more women running as Democrats or Republicans? Is there a breakdown between the two parties?
Yeah, it does seem like a lot of the women that are running are Democrats, but there are certainly a number of Republicans running as well. But we found in our research that women on both sides of the aisle really have advantages right now with voters.
When and if women, more and more women, make the office and voters vote them in, will we see policy changes that are different than what we see now? Do you think there would be different focuses?
Well, I mean, aside from policy, there are traits that women bring to the table. Voters know that women work across the aisle to get things done, and we see that now in Congress. Women really only make up about 20% of Congress right now, but you see in the Senate, the women senators all getting together, having meals together, working to build those relationships. And also, voters believe that women are in touch with their lives. And that could be for a number of reasons, but a lot of times, you know, in families, women are taking on the share of the emotional labor, and they understand all of the challenges or a number of the challenges that families are facing. And so families feel comfortable that women understand those challenges.
Mac made the observation that he's seeing women who have traditionally worked on campaigns, who have been the organizers, stepping forward and running for office. With that background of working on campaigns, does that help them in any way as they put together their own campaigns?
Absolutely. And our founder, Barbara Lee, always says that women have always been the backbone of every social movement, but they've always been in the background, licking envelopes and knocking on doors. And now, just as he said, we are seeing women take center stage. Certainly having that experience is valuable. But aside from that, it goes back to a lot of women saw the impact of an issue, got involved kind of on the sidelines, and now they are taking charge and stepping forward.
Let's bring in Jennifer in Elm Grove. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Vipons. I'm a pediatrician. I work in Waukesha, and I am running for U.S. Congress in District 5 this term.
What made you decide to do that?
Well, as a pediatrician, I've seen that healthcare has really been deteriorating over the last few years, and I wanted to try to make a difference. They haven't been addressing healthcare really at all, more just letting it implode, and I didn't find that acceptable. So between that and the opioid epidemic, I decided to try to make a difference on my own.
Amanda, go ahead.
So, I mean, this is really a living example of a woman who has a very unique background and skill set and perspective and has seen the impact of an issue and has been motivated to get involved instead of sitting on the sidelines. It's exactly what we're seeing all over the country.
Jennifer, do you think that just the timing of it all, why did you decide now to enter politics?
Well, part of it was just the things that have been building over the last 5 years. You know, the Congress is so polarized, and they don't seem to be able to get anything done. And I am the kind of a person who can work with both sides. I'm fairly moderate in my social views, so I see myself bringing together a consensus on the issues that we're facing right now.
We're talking women in politics here on The Morning Show. Amanda Hunter, our guide. You can join in 800-642-1234. We'll get back to the conversation after this news update right here on the Ideas Network. Been called a pink wave as a record number of women have entered midterm congressional races. The U.S. has a strikingly low percentage of women in Congress compared with the rest of the world. There's some catching up to do. We come in at 102 out of 188 in the percentage of women in the national legislature. We're talking about women running for office in record numbers on this June 1st filing deadline day here in Wisconsin. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let us hear another campaign ad. This is U.S. Representative Martha McSally running as a Republican for U.S. Senate in Arizona. Point of reference, this is retiring U.S. Senator Jeff Flake's seat.
Like our president, I'm tired of PC politicians and their BS excuses. I'm a fighter pilot, and I talk like one. That's why I told Washington Republicans to grow a pair of ovaries and get the job done.
Grow a pair of ovaries and get the job done. Amanda Hunter is keeping a close eye on women campaigns, the messages being sent. She's communications director for the Barbara Lee Family Foundation, working to advance women's representation in politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have any candidates in particular stood out to you? Do you think a more gender-balanced government with more female politicians would be different? In what way? 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. Let's go to Jeremy now, waiting in Racine. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. To me, it doesn't matter the gender of the candidate. It's how they conduct themselves on the campaign. What their message is, how consistent their message is, and who's financing their campaign. When Bernie Sanders ran, to me, that was a whole new level of how a candidate should be running their campaign. The majority of his donations were from the public. I think the most was $27 average. To me, that's very important, and I think that's very important to a lot of voters. Whether you're a woman or a man, I'm not sure if that's going to be a deciding factor. It's how an individual carries themselves and how they run their campaign and how they keep it clean.
Hmm.
To me, that's really important. So gender is not a big issue for me. It's just a matter of the conduct of the person, how they run their campaign.
Jeremy, thanks. Amanda, your insights there.
Yeah, Jeremy brings up an important point that gender isn't the only factor. Certainly party drives voter perception. Voters have preconceived ideas about what Republicans and Democrats bring to the table, and then that kind of can be a lens on how they view women candidates.
And an unprecedented number of Black women are making history running for political offices around the country. Looking at blackwomeninpolitics.com, which is this database that lists women of color running for political office this year, there are more than 600 African-American women candidates running for offices nationwide. Is that significant?
Absolutely. And that's been a very exciting trend that we're seeing. The possibility is having elected officials that look more like the districts that they govern. And we work very closely with Higher Heights, which is a great organization that supports Black women candidates. And this has been such an exciting year for them.
What are some of the challenges there of being a Black woman on the campaign trail?
Well, in addition to any sort of gender bias, that women of color have to face additional racial biases. And so that's an additional layer of barriers and issues that they have to navigate.
So as you look at these female candidates across the board at the local level, at the congressional level, what would be some advice that you would provide them as they go into the thick of campaign season?
I think number one is that authenticity is so important. Voters really respond well to women candidates who are being themselves, who are confident, and are running because they saw the impact of the issue. And even what we've seen today, these women are really showcasing their passion for particular issues and also highlighting the unique backgrounds that they come from. And an additional point is that there's really a difference for women who are running for executive office, like governor or mayor, versus to be part of a deliberative body. Voters are a little bit tougher on women that are running for executive office because for them to be the CEO of their city or of their state, it's an additional level of trust that voters place in them being the decision maker instead of a decision maker.
So there's a lot of work they have to do, certainly on the campaign trail, to prove themselves if they do get that opportunity to serve.
Absolutely. And that's actually why when Barbara started this foundation 20 years ago, we have studied every gubernatorial race involving women for 20 years because she saw the barriers that women face when running for executive office and how important it is for women as a stepping stone to hold those offices.
Let's go to Mike joining us from Madison. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how's it going?
Going well. What's on your mind here?
Well, I just wanted to address the last caller who said that gender doesn't really make a difference for the most part, and it's usually just philosophy and how they run their campaign. And I agree to that to a point. I think one of the biggest things is that we have to look at is the overall diversity in our representative government. And I think right now what we're running into is that we don't have a lot of diversity in our government, and you can see how this giant wave of thought goes through the process. And if we did have diversity, including women and including minorities, that I think we would have a lot of different point of views that would, you know, help us to, you know, create laws and create, you know, policy that affects everybody with all different kinds of backgrounds in a more fair manner. And I think that, you know, looking at it at a local level on a, you know, just a, this is my election, the people in my area, sure, you know, that doesn't seem like a big deal if you vote for a man over a woman or a white person over a black person. But in the grand scheme of things, it does matter, because if everybody starts feeling that way, nobody's going to feel the responsibility to do it, and we're going to end up without representation of a diverse nature.
Hmm. Mike, thanks for bringing that to the table. Amanda, your insights.
Absolutely. And having more voices at the table and a diversity of voices is what strengthens our democracy and enriches our culture, frankly.
So what are you watching for as this election season plays out?
So what's really interesting, I mean, so many things, but our study, Modern Family, we did not too long ago, we put it out in 2017, the one about how voters feel about candidates' family situations and with small children. But what we're seeing in this cycle is women are really changing the face of politics in so many ways, by highlighting these different backgrounds, by being open about balancing motherhood and other responsibilities. And so we're watching very closely to see if this is finally the push that voters need to change their perceptions that haven't really kept up with family situations since the 1960s.
Well, Amanda, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. This was so fun. Thank you.
Amanda Hunter is the communications director for the Barbara Lee Family Foundation, which works to advance women's equality and representation in American politics and in the field of contemporary art. She joined us as our guide, looking into the challenges and the opportunities women running for office face this election season. For the next few weeks, Wisconsin Public Radio is airing profiles of almost a dozen candidates for governor. And we're going to begin today with a look at Governor Scott Walker, who is seeking his third term. As WPR's Sean Johnson reports, the lack of a clear Democratic challenger has given Walker a chance to run an upbeat campaign.
When Scott Walker stopped at a Shopko department store near Pewaukee to promote his new $100 per child tax credit, the mood was relaxed, and so was the governor. About a dozen reporters showed up to watch, and about a dozen employees did too. Walker talked with a few of them on his way in about what he'd heard from a parent of 10 kids at a previous stop.
She said, "Here are my kids. That's a grand right there." I said, "Wow."
As he moved to a microphone set up in front of the kids' sportswear section, Walker said the child tax credit was another way to give back to taxpayers. He said Democrats who call the checks election year bribes are really just knocking him.
Let's just be honest here. State Democrats, you fill in the blank, they're opposed to whatever I'm for.
The approach has carried over to Walker's advertising. He's run 4 TV ads, mostly featuring people who got private sector jobs with the help of state government.
Yeah, it gives us a leg up.
Wisconsin is working.
Larry Sabato is the director of the Center for Politics at the University of Virginia. He says there's a chance Walker's positive approach is aimed more at Democratic voters than it is Republicans.
Maybe he's trying to melt a little of the intensity of the Democrats in opposing him.
The last few years, however, have not been without controversy. In 2014, Walker dismissed suggestions that he would sign a right-to-work law or run for president. In 2015, he did both. And last year, Walker negotiated a contract that could pay tech giant Foxconn up to $4.5 billion in taxpayer money to build TV screens in Wisconsin. Democratic Congressman Mark Pocan of Madison says he tells the governor's opponents that Foxconn is their ticket to beat Walker.
I have told them all the exact same thing, that Foxconn is radioactive toxic across the state.
But there are at least some Democrats who worry that their party still hasn't figured out what it takes to beat the governor. Democratic consultant Scott Witkoff, who is advising Mike McCabe in the governor's race, says it's not enough to just attack Walker.
The problem with that is that that resonates with the choir. And the slice of the pie in terms of political discourse that aligns with the choir has been shrinking.
Former conservative talk radio host Jerry Bader, who's now the communications director for Media Trackers, thinks Democrats have demonized Walker so much that they've lost credibility.
A lot of the gloom and doom stuff that they predicted did not come to pass.
Walker has even gone so far as to suggest this year that Democrats are filled with anger and hatred toward him. He references a comment by State Superintendent of Public Instruction Tony Evers, who called Walker an idiot for rejecting federal Medicaid funds.
I think a lot of voters are shocked to think that people that hold office would call other people in office things like that.
There is, of course, a more prominent office holder who uses insults as a political tool all the time.
Comey's a liar and a leaker. Maxine Waters, a very low IQ individual.
President Donald Trump, the leader of the Republican Party, used insults to get elected and continues to use them in the White House. Walker supports the president, but downplays suggestions that Trump makes his case more difficult.
You know, Washington is a whole different place, but I think the contrast is if people don't like what's happening in Washington with anybody, Democrat, Republican alike, if they don't like the tone there, we're the cure to that.
Walker's political instincts have served him well in Wisconsin, where he's won three statewide elections in the past 8 years. But at least 10 Democrats are hoping they'll be the one to end the winning streak. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And WPR continues with profiles of the rest of the candidates for governor next week. This hour of the morning show was produced by Brianne Shasso and Sarah Hopeful. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.